The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball. Raised in front of a computer screen. Raised for covering the game. Raised by Wolves. Now talking all things Timberwolves with beat writer Derek James. Here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
Indeed, we are back here with you with another edition of Raised by Wolves. I'm Manny Hill. Derek James is here. We got lots to talk about in regards to the Minnesota Timberwolves this week. We are a day after an interesting loss to the Brooklyn Nets, who were a little bit undermanned. And we got Jimmy Butler going for a game-winning shot that was interesting. An interesting choice of a shot, I think.
It was questionable. I mean, I don't have a problem with putting the ball in Butler's hands in that situation. In fact, I probably prefer it because, I mean, you have Towns, you know, who can hit shots, but usually in those situations, you don't dump it into the big to get a basket.
Right.
That's usually not how things work. But I think the issue with it was just how late he went in the clock. What did you say, about 5 seconds left?
Yeah, it was about 5 seconds left, and he was still sort of casually dribbling. He hadn't really gone into his shot
and
yet.
And then he didn't leave any time for an offensive rebound, which they actually got, but by the time they kicked it out, the clock had already ended by the time whoever it was caught. I think it might have been Wiggins or something. And you really just have to give your guys more time to have that, get that second chance shot off, and they didn't.
Yeah, so Wolves lose to the Nets 98-97. Spencer Dinwiddie, I mean, wow. Where the hell did that come from? Yeah,
he's a cool story. I mean, he was what? I wrote about this. He was drafted by the Pistons in 2014, 38th overall, went up and down from the G League to the Pistons, and then was traded to Chicago for Cam Bairstow, who I know we all know very well.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Bulls waived him, re-signed him, and then cut him in training camp in 2016. Then Sean Marks signed him to a multi-year deal, and he's been a solid player.
Wow.
That's the thing with this Nets team is, I mean, Sean Marks, is the GM of the Nets, has done a great job just finding, you know, these talents and the guys who just play hard. You know, they have some skill, and it, on any given night, if the opponent's off, I mean, you're going to have a good chance to win. And I think that's what we saw, because how many times have we seen the Wolves get out-rebounded by six?
Yeah.
It doesn't happen a lot. I mean, they still had a decent amount of second chance points. They were 1-for-11 from three.
Yeah.
And you said they had, what, 10 assists on 36 shots? I mean, it's just a weird, weird game. And yet, the Nets just didn't have enough talent to run away with it. And the Wolves were always in it. They just couldn't quite get over that hump.
It's interesting that if Jimmy Butler's shot had gone in, then you're thinking, okay, the Wolves win a game on the road against kind of an undermanned team, but they only hit 1 3-pointer and only had 10 assists, they won the game. You'd be like, hey, all right, well, you know.
You'd be it wasn't pretty, but, you know, you'll take it. And I mean, it's just one of those weird nights that's going to happen. I do think the thing that they do have to look at is that they attempted 11 3-pointers in total. The Nets hit 14.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just, they lost the three point shot points. That's hard to say. 42-3.
Oof.
I mean, that's tough. I mean, so you're trying to feast off a lot of mid range.
So they're -39.
Yeah.
On three.
That's
on three
actually
point
a
scoring.
Much more concise way to put it.
Yeah.
And then
wow.
You don't have any assists, so you're not getting the ball movement, and it's really tells you the story of what the game looked like. It was a lot of forced long twos, and it was not pretty.
The last edition that we did was with, of course, Matthew Collar came in, and that was a lot of fun talking with him. And later that night, the Wolves played the Nuggets in that overtime game, which they won because Jimmy Butler said that he can't, you know what, with me, which I thought was awesome. Like that was great. And that's
he said Tango.
Yeah,
right?
I think it was Tango. Yeah,
yeah, something dance related, I'm sure.
but in that game, Jeff Teague suffers the knee sprain, which
the Wolves did lose something that night.
Yeah, and when I first saw it, you know, when I saw it live, I didn't realize what had happened, and then I saw Jeff Teague down on the floor, and it looked like he was in some pain, and I wasn't sure what had happened, and then I saw the replay, and then I saw like what happened to his leg, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, like that.
Yeah.
That, like I looked at it and I thought, man, that has ACL written all over it. But then we get the news that it was just a grade one
MCL
sprain. So,
which is kind of scary in itself too, because those sprains, I mean, anytime you stretch out those ligaments, as someone who's had a lot of ankle issues,
yeah,
I mean, even though these are professional athletes with the best trainers, rehab specialists, and everything, you still kind of worry about that. And you just want them to really make sure that Teague's back 100%. Because we're seeing right now, and I think this is where you're going with this, Tyus Jones, he can start. He's a phenomenal backup. But behind Tyus, it gets ugly really fast.
Yes, it does. Yeah, it does. And Tyus, I mean, to his credit, he's done a nice job filling in, and he's done everything you could ask of him, I think, in that role, in that he's been very capable of being able to just step in and pick up some of the slack. But there is quite the drop off, I think, with him and Aaron Brooks. Aaron Brooks if this had been Aaron Brooks from, you know, maybe 3-4 years ago, you'd feel better about it, but he just doesn't look like the same guy anymore.
No, well, the problem is you have two smaller point guards, which is really a matchup problem, you know, on most nights in the NBA when you have two point guards that are not very big.
Yeah.
But then just think of when Tyus Jones, you know, got his clock cleaned a little bit late in that game, and you're like, is Aaron Brooks going to have to run the crunch time offense? I mean, there is legitimate concern there. And thankfully, Tyus Jones is able to come back in the game, and we didn't have to see that. But it just goes to show you that, you know, they're really one play away from being in a crisis, you know, until T gets back, which is only, what, probably a month-ish or so?
Yeah, I think they said on the low end, like 2 to 4 weeks or something like that, and we're already a week into it now. But, yeah, I mean, I think we're it's interesting. Like, remember how, you know, they signed Jeff Teague when they first signed him, and there were a lot of people that were upset, and, you know, he's not Ricky, and, you know, we miss Ricky and all that. And now, like, as soon as he gets hurt, now we're like, oh, my goodness, like, what are they going to do now? Like, what's going to happen now, sort of thing. So it's interesting how that kind of turns. We are brought to you, by the way, by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves.
We are not yet the official podcast of the Minnesota Timberwolves, though, so we need to work on that.
Yeah, I think we need to work on that a little bit. Okay, so you, I think we saw this at about the same time, and you texted me. I was producing the ride with Royce today. Myron Medcalf filled in for Patrick today and every day this week, save for New Year's Day. And you know, I'm just going through Twitter, and I saw this, and I saw Sean Hyken, our guy, tweet this out: the All-Star voting, the initial All-Star voting so far. And I think you and we saw it at about the same time, because you texted me about it, and I'm looking at this, and I'm flabbergasted. And again, this is just, you know, this is fan voting, and we've got these Twitter votes that are counting and all this stuff. So I get that part of it, but I'm just looking at these numbers, and I'm flabbergasted by this. So, for the Western Conference, Kevin Durant's leading the way with, you know, over 767,000 votes, and, you know, in the front court and everything.
That's an outrage.
Then you've got Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins, and we're gonna have a guest on who covers the New Orleans Pelicans today too. So, listen ahead for that too as well. So we'll get into those two guys. But so those two guys are, you know, at the top for the front court guys. For the guards, you got Steph Curry, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Klay Thompson. And then the fifth guy on the list for guards in the Western Conference, Manu Ginobili, at 231,460 votes.
At 41 years old. I mean... The All-Star voting is always a popularity contest. I think that's why you have Lonzo Ball with the eighth most votes right now.
Jimmy Butler, by the way, our guy, Jimmy Butler, with the Wolves, 10th in guards for voting.
Well, Manny, I'm sorry I wasn't getting to that fast enough for you there. But then Devin Booker's ahead of Jimmy Butler, and normally you'd think, oh, well, Towns has more votes than Jimmy Butler, which kind of is surprising given how people have kind of, you know, soured on due to his defense and all that. So you'd think that Towns has more votes. That must mean Jimmy Butler is doing really well, right? No. I mean, Jimmy Butler has 88,000 votes. And here's the thing. Isaiah Thomas in the East has 87,000. He's played one game. I love Isaiah Thomas. Fantastic player. But there's no way that Jimmy Butler isn't more deserving than that. Or, I mean, even more so than Devin Booker right now. Devin Booker is turning into a pretty good player. But Jimmy Butler is a better player right now. Yes. Lonzo Ball should be up there. I mean, if Butler was in Manu's position in fifth behind Klay Thompson, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Steph Curry, that would be no big deal. That'd be right. That'd be pretty fair, actually, I would think. But this fact that he's so low, it's just so weird. And, you know, it is a popularity contest. Fans do vote by name recognition. And maybe if you have the casual fans voting, they're going to vote for their Currys, Hardens, Durants, LeBrons, and all those guys before they think to get to Jimmy Butler.
Jimmy has just under 5,000 more votes than Enes Kanter. Like, Enes Kanter has 83,000 votes.
I feel like Kanter's getting a New York bump, though, too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
That's like Kyle Kuzma, you know, being in the top 10 for the front court as well. Even though Kuzma's great, you just don't see rookies do this well.
Right.
You know, and add Lonzo Ball in there, you really don't see two rookies ever ranked that high unless they're really once in a generation.
Yeah. So, I mean, I tend to think Jimmy's still going to end up making the All-Star team. One way or the other, because he's too good, and he's having too good of a season now, especially after the slow start, to not be an All-Star this year.
I had a funny thought, by the way. I just realized.
Sure.
LeBron James and Kyrie Irving could start this game together. Well, they're doing the captain's thing. So if they're doing it the old way, they definitely would. But if they're both picked for the same team, which would just be hilarious, because you know LeBron would just give the biggest stink eye to the guy who picked them to be on the same team. It would just be amazing. And we're not guaranteed to have that, which is disappointing.
Yeah. I'll be excited to see Durant and Westbrook on the same team again, too.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure somebody will do that.
Well, yeah.
Well, no, I guess would Durant be a captain?
I don't,
because he's the leading vote getter right now for the West.
Oh, is that how they're doing it?
I'm not sure if that's exactly how they're doing it, or if they just taken like the top two.
The NBA is really screwing this up. They're not going to televise it, and I guess you don't want to see guys, you know, with hurt feelings, who gets picked last and all this, and be a punchline. But whatever, it'd be so much fun to see, and people want to see that. And then they're not like really promoting this, like, oh yeah, the so and so is going to be the captains and this or that. So I mean, just think, fans would probably vote more if they knew, like, they could get their guy to be a captain of an All-Star team.
I love, by the way, that Giannis is the overall leader in votes.
That's so
right
much
now.
Fun.
That's
the guy
awesome.
Who plays in Milwaukee. And like for years in the NBA, we heard, oh, the Lakers and the Knicks are the only ones that matter. The NBA wants them to be great. And then you have Giannis Antetokounmpo in Milwaukee as the leading vote getter.
That's fantastic. I love it.
By the way, our guy Dwight Howard, 57,000 votes, 10th in the front court. Good for Dwight.
We're happy for you, Dwight. All right, we have a guest coming up, Mason Ginsberg, who does some work with the New Orleans Pelicans. He covers the Pelicans when, of course, Boogie and Brow are coming to town to play the Wolves this weekend.
Mason's actually coming up here, and we're going to catch up a little bit, so I figured it'd be a good time to get him on the pod beforehand, since he's going to be doing another podcast while he's in town. And being a Saturday game, we don't tape on Saturdays, so I figured this was kind of the shot that we had.
All right, so we'll bring Mason in here after this, and we'll talk some Pelicans in relation to the Wolves, of course. We'll talk some Boogie and Brow with Mason after this.
Here's what you may have missed on a recent Purple podcast.
But in a playoff game where you know that Drew Brees will have some success, Drew Brees, if you have to face him, I'm just throwing his name out there, but if it's playoff football, you're probably going to have to score at some point and not just expect that if you run into a big stretch of a whole quarter or two quarters where you can't produce at all, that your defense is just going to hold every single time. And if you have one concern about this team's chances in the playoffs, I think that's where it's at, and the fact that they are having to shuffle up front.
You can find the Purple Podcast on iTunes, Podcast One, or 1500ESPN.com's podcast page.
He is a blogger for Bourbon Street Shots, which is, of course, part of the ESPN True Hoop Network. Lots of New Orleans Pelicans chatter there. He is Mason Ginsberg joining us here on the Raised by Wolves podcast. How you doing, man?
Doing pretty well. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we appreciate having you on. All right, so first thing, I just read a tweet from you about 2 hours ago.
We just got done raving about this topic, too.
So we just got through talking about, like, the initial numbers that we're seeing now with the All-Star voting, And we just got through like complaining about, you know, how low Jimmy Butler's numbers are up here in Minnesota, which is just a damn shame right now. But I like this tweet from you 2 hours ago, though. Allow fans to add to the All-Star voting madness by using the hashtag NBA downvote to give a player minus one vote. I love it. I love the idea. If Manu Ginobili is going to have this many votes right now, I love that idea. I'm with you.
Yeah, I don't know how it came to me, but this, I mean, I think it was more along the lines of the fact that every year, plenty of people complain, and you know, I've had my share of complaints about, you know, looking at the voting and seeing who's at the top, and it's a popularity contest, but you know, it'd be pretty funny to see just as like a test how that would turn out.
It sounds like chaos, and I can kind of support just about anything that incites chaos in sports.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So you're coming up this weekend as the Pelicans are coming to town to play the Wolves. How are the fans looking at the Pelicans right now? Are people excited about what's going on with, like, you know, the Boogie Brow combination right now? Are they a little disappointed because they thought it might be better? You know, what's sort of the what sense are you getting from the fan base on how that team is looking so far?
Yeah, it's a really interesting topic because, I mean, you look at the Vegas over-unders in the preseason, most of them had the Pelicans around upper 30s, and the fans were kind of a lot of the fans had accepted that this team was a fringe playoff team, but also the fact that, you know, seeds 5 through 11 before the season were looked at as kind of, you know, whoever can stay healthy is going to get in. So there was a pretty wide potential variance for what seed they would come in, but as far as how things are being looked at right now, people are frustrated because of how good the team has looked at times, and so just the fact that they'll have some great games and then they'll just have some total duds, and that nothing really highlights that fact more than their end. The end of 2017, they lost back-to-back nights at home to the Mavericks and the Knicks, and so I mean, and the Knicks have an okay team this year, but I mean, you shouldn't lose either of those games at home, especially to the Mavericks. And granted, the Mavericks just got super hot from distance, and but I mean, they're both games the Pelicans could and should have won, and so just some general frustration that they. You know, they started to turn things around in Utah, but what we've learned about this team is, you know, every time you think they've got it figured out, bad things happen again, and so there's just no consistency.
Talk to me about just how Boogie and Brow, you know, DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis, how that duo is working. Are they being utilized the best way? I mean, is Alvin Gentry, is he doing everything is he doing all the right things in terms of just how to use those guys offensively and defensively for that matter, or, you know, or is there room for growth there?
I think things are clicking pretty well offensively. This team's been I think they're sixth in offensive rating in the league so far this year, and they've been since Rondo got back after he missed about the first month with injury. I mean, that the offense has been humming. I mean, there's very, very few complaints on that front. I mean, they'll have lapses at times. There'll be situations where maybe Boogie, wants to get his, and you'll have four people standing around while Cousins just does his thing. And generally on offense, it's been great. The problem's been on the defensive end. They started out well, but they started out with a pretty weak offensive schedule over the first month. And so the numbers kind of look skewed. Like when Rondo came back, the defense tanked. And while Rondo's not a good defender, I mean, but I don't think his comeback alone has tanked this defense. It's a number of things. I mean, and it's tough from a personnel perspective. I mean, you're starting three guards. You're starting Moore, Rondo, and Holiday, and then two big men. So that creates a ton of scheme difficulties for Darren Erman and the rest of the coaching staff, but also it's just effort. I mean, these guys, AD and Boogie, you can count multiple times per game where, you know, they either think they got fouled or they take a tough shot and they're in bad position. They just kind of lag back down the court and the Pelicans get burned in transition. They're one of the worst transition defenses in the league, and it's been pretty frustrating because although this unit is not going to be a good defensive team. Hopefully the return of Solomon Hill helps with that. They were good with him in the lineup last year, but they're not going to be good, but they can be, you know, they can be average to slightly below average, which is all they need with a top five, borderline top five offense. They just need to, you know, give that consistent effort every night.
I think one thing that surprised me in looking at the Pelicans this year and kind of boning up for this episode was how well Etuan Moore is shooting. I mean, he's had his years, but I mean, he's currently leading the league in 3-point percentage right now with almost 4 attempts per game. How on earth is he this good? Because I don't remember him being that good of a shooter.
Yeah, I mean, so he had a pretty average year last year, but the year before that in Chicago, he shot 45%. So they brought him in, they want him to shoot, and I think the one thing they wanted him to do this year that he didn't do as much last year is just be a willing shooter. I mean, he shot when wide open last year, but he wasn't as aggressive, and now he's really shooting the ball a little more, and he's having real success. Him and Darius Miller is another guy. Those two have really, I mean, surprised a lot of people. Darius Miller more so than Etuan Moore, but everyone thought this team was a bottom 10 3-point shooting team, and I made the argument before the season that, you know, even if they're a ranker in the low bottom third of the NBA in shooting ability, the fact that AD and Boogie are there to take so much attention away, it's going to give more open looks, and I think you're going to get a league average 3-point percentage when all said and done. Boy, was I wrong, because they've surpassed that, and they're looking very good. And I mean, I think. I mean, this is a big part of the reason why they've been so good offensively.
Well, I think, too, I mean, they've had Dante Cunningham, who's kind of had a down year from distance, and then Cousins and Boogie, I mean, they can get hot on any given night. So, I mean, even though they're rather top-heavy with, you know, the 5 starters, it seems like, from just an overall talent perspective, it seems like on any given night, they could just get hot and they could light someone up.
Yep, and it's definitely been the case. Honestly, a couple of the nights when they've actually been hottest are against teams that they've lost to, with like Golden State and Houston. I mean, it's tough to keep up with those teams, but they've been getting hot consistently, which is, you know, usually when you talk about the Pelicans shooters getting hot, it's a few and far between. But it's been a delight to watch when they find their stroke.
Manny, it kind of reminds me of the way the Timberwolves have a worse record when they turn the ball over fewer than 10 times and force the opponent to turn over, I don't know, more than 15 or something. How you just have like those exceptional nights where you should win those games, but you just don't.
Yeah, it's that's just crazy. Mason, I want to ask you about Boogie Cousins specifically. He's on the last year of his deal. Free agency is looming this summer. Where do you see him in terms of, does he want to continue to stay there, or is this sort of a thing where fans down there are sort of sitting on their hands right now, just nervous that he may be headed elsewhere this summer?
It's hard to say, especially being someone in Chicago who's not, you know, in the locker room every day and kind of getting a real pulse. But it seems like he likes being where he is. You know, he has family in Mobile, and he seems like being close to home, or at least that's what he says it publicly, is, you know, it's important to him. And I think if this team can move in the right direction and really show some real signs of growth, I think he would like to stick around. But it's just it's still obviously a question mark, and we'll see as things keep going. It's just really tough to say, you know, in January without knowing where this team's going to finish. But the team's highs have been great, but and if they can keep that effort up and really learn how winning games feels, especially with Cousins, who's never been to the playoffs, and if he gets that taste of the playoffs, and even if they lose in the first round, if they have a hard fought series, or and really feel like they can keep building on something here, and then I think that'll go a long way.
It's interesting when you look up and down that roster, you forget that Boogie is like the one main guy who has not been to the playoffs. I mean, the Pelicans a couple of years ago, they were the 8th seed and they played the Warriors in the first round. So it's like, even like Anthony Davis and Drew Holiday's been in the league for a while now. He's been on some playoff teams.
But then you're 7 or 8 of Boogie too?
Yeah. And then you think, wow, yeah, that's right. Like, Boogie's never been to the playoffs, and like everybody else on the roster, at least all the main guys, have some playoff experience to some mm-hmm. degree. What's your assessment of Alvin Gentry and how he's doing here? Because he's been there a few years now, and you know, what's kind of your thoughts on how he's doing overall as a head coach?
It's probably the most polarizing topic, and and among the fans of New Orleans right now is Gentry's job. And it was tough for him because the first couple seasons, I mean, injuries really, really crushed this team. And so it's hard to find the line of when is it, you know, not, when is it more Gentry's fault than the injury's fault? But I mean, like some of the rosters that are some of the, you know, rotations that he had to use because of all the injuries were just tough. But you know, I mean, it seems to be, you know, people have Pelicans fans. Some have been calling for his job when the Pelicans just come out lifeless and show no effort, and just they're quick to blame him. And you know, my general approach to coaching is that I think there's a few guys on either end of the spectrum that really, really matter, and will either win your team games or be the cause of a loss here and there. And then the bulk of the coaches in the middle, it's just, you know, do the players like him? Does he get through to the players? Does it fit, and does it all make sense? And so I'm kind of indifferent on Gentry at this point. I think if they can see a clear upgrade after the season, they should absolutely, you know, look into it and try to make that move. But as far as his status right now, I mean, it would be ludicrous to even consider making a move midseason unless his team's clearly out of the playoff picture. But you know, like I said, if there's a clear upgrade out there after the season and the management's still not happy, now, if the current management's even still in place, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to a move.
What are your thoughts on like some of the other, you know, role players on the team? I mean, you know, Drew Holiday is kind of the third guy between the, you know, the two big guys who are stars, obviously. You know, Rondo came in as, you know, as a free agent acquisition, and you know, he's had his moments there, but just overall, like how are some of the other role players on the team looking? I mean, we talked about Dante Cunningham a little bit there too. What's kind of your assessment on some of the other guys? And we mentioned, you know, Darius Miller in the shooting there, and Etuan Moore as well. But what's your overall feel like? Is there enough there to, you know, keep them into this playoff spot that they're trying to get, or is there, you know, do they need to make another move for somebody else just to add a little bit to the table? What's your kind of your thoughts on that?
I think they have enough there right now to really get in. I mean, I think they're tops, especially, I mean, it's hinges on Solomon Hill coming back and giving real minutes. Obviously he's not going to do a ton for you on offense, but given how bad the defense has been, he's a guy that can really come in and help, close that gap. And so, I mean, looking at Rondo, Drew, and Etuan Moore as your three main guards, and then, Darius Miller and Solomon Hill, and then Drew and our Boogie and AD with maybe, I mean, those are the seven guys right there at the top end. You could add one more to take some minutes away, or you know, Dante Cunningham's not a bad eighth man if you're looking at a backup power forward who's going to get 10 minutes a game in the playoffs, but you can certainly upgrade. And so I think, you know, it's something they'll look at. I mean, they have their first round pick, which they've, you know, very freely traded away in recent years. And so, but I mean, I think they have avenues to add another rotation player, but I think largely this is the unit you'll see, you know, moving forward. And like I said, they're going to be really hoping that Solomon Hill can come in and replace some of the minutes taken up by some of the guys at the end of the roster right now.
Now, you also pay attention to the rest of the league, and I'm sure you've, you know, caught a few Timberwolves games because, I mean, they're actually more interesting now. And I feel like, do you feel like there's a sense that the Wolves and the Pelicans are kind of in a similar situation where they're really going to go as far as their bench is going to take them, and you're just kind of hoping, well, maybe if they could get that guy to step up, or oh, if they could just swing one more move and get one more guy. Do you see some similarity there?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. There's been, I mean, the question is, who is that guy? All right, not really who is that guy, but what role is that guy? Is it another combo guard who can, or a bigger guard who can help defend wings a little better than the Pelicans' undersized guards? Is it a third big so that you're not having to play Anthony Davis and Cousins 40 plus minutes a night every night to get to the playoffs? I mean, who is that guy? Because they're not going to be able to add probably more than one, even if they can add somebody, it's not going to be, they're going to have a ton of, you know, assets to flip for someone. So that's more of the question is what is the piece that the Pelicans would benefit from most in the playoffs? And it's an interesting question.
Yeah, because and it, you know, like Derek mentioned, it's, you know, it sounds like, you know, the Wolves are like in that same position where, mm-hmm. you know, Tibbs plays the starter so many minutes and you just, you look at the bench and you just want, you know, it'd be nice if like Belly or somebody can really kind of step up into a more significant role.
Or have
role
someone who can step up besides Jamal Crawford when he's 1-for-6 on a night or something.
Yeah.
You exactly. could sign Jordan Crawford.
Well, I mean, we could. We wouldn't want to step on the Pelicans' toes there.
Mason, what are your thoughts on the Wolves? I know you've gotten a chance to see them now a couple times as the Wolves and Pelicans have played a couple times, and I know you follow the league as a whole pretty extensively, and you know, just your views from afar on the Wolves and you know, overall and you know, and how they're doing and sort of this mix of players and Tom Thibodeau and everything. What's your assessment of them?
I mean, they're definitely a dangerous team, and the Jimmy Butler trade has worked out fantastically for them, as most people thought it would. Especially because I know Zach LaVine was a big, very helpful player for the Wolves, but Tyus Jones has really, really impressed me this year. I think I don't want to say people wrote him off, but people didn't really expect, at least outside of Minnesota, from my understanding, didn't really expect what they've gotten from him so far. And he's obviously playing an even bigger role now with Teague out. But I mean, he's a pivotal guy. And I mean, I'm curious what it's going to take for Tibbs to trust a little more of his bench and really save some of these guys for the playoffs. Cause I mean, who knows what's going to happen. I mean, once you get to April or May, I mean, this Wolves roster is, you know, a 4 or 5 seed at minimum with, you know, if you look at their starting lineup, but are they going to have the legs to you know, make a deep playoff run is the question, I guess, I'm wondering about.
What do you think of Andrew Wiggins? Cause he's been kind of, I don't know if polarizing, Derek, is the right way to describe him, but
yeah,
it's
pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, because it's been very mixed in terms of like the overall feeling of him up here, where you have people that are, you know, defending him and saying, "Wow, you know, he's still young, he's still 22 years old, and you know, he's going to get better."
Casual Cavs fans don't think the Cavs should have made that trade for Kevin Love,
right? But then you also have the other side of it, where you know people are looking at a lot of the advanced metrics on him right now, and the numbers overall this year have not been good. And there's just sort of that question of if he, you know, is he really ever going to reach his full potential? Where do you kind of stand on that in terms of, you know, just where Andrew Wiggins is at and where he could potentially go?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because, again, he is really young, but it's going to start. I don't think it's a major concern right now, but now that they signed him to that giant extension, it becomes an issue pretty quickly. And yeah. So, I like him as a player. I don't like him for the money that the Timberwolves are going to be giving him for his next contract, but he's young and he's still got a chance. I mean, I think he showed flashes earlier on in the season, and now he's kind of regressed back to, you know, more of just the score and not much else. But there's definitely still time there.
Yeah, I mean it's been like, I think more than anything, if there's been one major debate with this team, one like consistent debate with this team all year, really since he signed that contract, it's been Andrew Wiggins. Just everybody's opinion on him, and it's been one side or the other. It's been amazing.
Well, coming into the season, I thought that Wiggins was going to be the biggest determinant of how far this team could go. I mean, we knew what we were probably getting from Jimmy, and it's been everything that we thought. Towns has been Towns. But Andrew Wiggins really filling that third role, that third option. I think part of it, too, is he's never had to be the third option before, even a secondary option. It's always been the guy. And I think there's some adjustment to be expected in that. But I think, yeah, Mason, you mentioned the money, and that does factor into how we view these guys long term. But also, too, this is year 4.
Yeah.
I mean, years 1, 2, 3, even, you know, learning, even though Wiggins is only 23, this is year 4. I mean, he's had almost 200 NBA games, probably has 200 NBA games by now.
10,000 minutes or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and you want to see more. I mean, any improvement has been really just incremental so far.
Yeah, and I mean, looking at the Timberwolves cap sheet, I mean, the rest of it's is fine. I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about Jang, but I thought he's been – I know he really hasn't played a ton of minutes this year, but up until this year, I feel like he's been fine for that contract. He's, I mean, from the stats he's put up, he's been, it's been a reasonable deal. And so, I mean, everything else looks very, very solid on their books. And it's just, this contract's going to quickly become, a big deal for them, and whether or not Wiggins can really take that next step.
The nice thing, at least, the Wolves can actually basically hit the reset button after 2019. If Jimmy Butler's deal's up, they'll basically just have Towns and Wiggins. And I mean, ultimately, if you wanted to trade it, you could find a way to do it. It might cost you to do it, but there is a way to do it. You'd rather not have to do that ultimately, because I think if you're blowing this core up within 2 years, something's gone horribly wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Drew Holiday's been a guy, you know, going back to the Pelicans here, Drew Holiday's been a guy I've always kind of liked, even going back to his days in Philly. You know, how's he doing down there? He just got the big new contract with them, with the Pelicans too. And you know, how's he doing down there? How's he sort of fitting in as kind of the third, sort of the third part of the Pelicans' big three, so to speak?
I think he's always going to be looked at as a guy who is. I mean, it's a nature of a small market team. He was overpaid. I don't think. Based on his production over the past couple seasons, and as long as you are confident that he can stay healthy, and I think he's gone a long way to prove that he's fully recovered from his knee issue. So I'm not even remotely concerned about that anymore. But he's a guy the Pelicans had to keep. I mean, he's a solid two-way player. He's been very strong defensively this year individually. He started out the season pretty rough. He was still trying to figure out, how do I fit in with these two high volume players, in DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis. And, I think now, especially recently, he's really, started to figure it out. He's been a great off ball player. He's thrived on the offensive end at the two guard alongside, Rajon Rondo. The Pelicans are also can be a very strong defensive unit with him at the one. They're not as potent offensively, but they can put together a stout five-man unit on the defensive end with him, particularly when Solomon Hill comes back. He's been very, very important to this Pelicans team. He's going to continue to be important, and they really need him to be the clear-cut third best player. And the first couple weeks of the season, you're kind of wondering, well, I mean, not only is he not worth the money, but he's not even the third best player on this team right now. And yeah, those concerns have been washed away, and he's been without a doubt the Pelicans number three in their big three. And he's the best on-off net rating on the team, even better than AD. So he's bounced back, and he's been very solid for New Orleans this year.
Well, I think the thing with Drew too, I mean, he's 27 years old, so he's right. He's the same age as Cousins, just a few years older than Anthony Davis. So he fits right in with their age if they keep this together. But hasn't the issue with Drew just always been staying healthy and being able to stay on the floor?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, more or less his first couple of years, obviously there was that whole issue with Philly where they didn't disclose all of his medical history or whatever it was. And, but I mean, even last year, it wasn't an injury. It was the fact that his wife had was having complications, and he needed to take time with his family, and so he missed the first month or so of the season because of that. But he really hasn't had any knee problems in the past couple of years. He ended the prior season early because of he broke his eye or it was an orbital fracture. So just a freak injury. So he's been fine for the last couple of years, and so the Pelicans obviously wouldn't have given him all that money if they were very concerned about his medical. So I think we're past it, fortunately.
Is this going to be, and obviously we're still in the middle of a season and we still got, more than half the season to go. So I don't want to, just focus completely on the future with this team, but is this, regardless of what happens for them for the rest of this season, is this going to be a pretty big summer for the franchise, with Boogie being up for free agency and, all the trade rumors surrounding Anthony Davis for the last couple of years? Is this going to be sort of a big summer for the franchise to really sort of determine which direction they go?
Yes or no. I mean, the hope is that it's not a big summer, because if it's not a big summer, that means you re-signed Cousins. And then you're capped out and you move forward, and you do what you can around the edges, and that's it. So if Cousins, if something bad happens, Pelicans don't make the playoffs, the Pelicans are just blown away by the Warriors or Rockets to a degree that Cousins says, this isn't any fun, I'm going somewhere else, then yeah, you the wheels have to start spinning. You have to see what Anthony Davis is thinking. You take one last shot to replace Cousins. You can if he walks, you don't have a ton of cap space, but you can create enough cap space to really find a guy who can replace him. But I mean, again, the Pelicans aren't a hot destination. They haven't been. Their biggest free agent signing in history in New Orleans is probably Peja, before the 2007-2008 playoff year. And they had to drastically overpay him too. So it's tough. So piece number one is obviously Cousins, and after that, you got to figure out where you're at with Anthony Davis and what you can and can't do to keep him.
So you're coming up this weekend as the Pelicans are coming to town to play the Wolves, and what's going to be the plan for you when you get to the Twin Cities?
Hopefully, just getting there to start. I mean, I decided to drive instead of fly, as long as there's no serious snow, which I don't think there's any in the forecast. Nothing except going to grab beer with Derek. Figure it out from there, and then head back on Sunday in time to catch the Saints playoff game against the Panthers at 3:30, I think.
Yeah, it's NFL playoff action coming up, and I was just talking with Derek before we started taping. We were talking about my guy Alvin Kamara, who because I'm a Tennessee football fan, and I love Alvin Kamara, and we were talking about what was it, like a tweet or something Derek had, and obviously we're not going to repeat what the quote was, but
the article's great if you haven't read it.
Yeah, but I love the guy, and I was just telling Derek about how the small part of me, and I love Dalvin Cook, but going into the draft this past year, I wanted the Vikings to take Alvin Kamara for selfish reasons because I love him because he's a former Tennessee Vol and everything, but. Yeah, I mean that's going to be fun, man, and the Saints are back in the playoffs, and Vikings fans up here I think are still a little bit bitter about the 2009 NFC Championship game, but that'll be saved for a different podcast and a different format and all that stuff. Mason, safe travels when you come up here to the Twin Cities this weekend, and thanks for joining us. Good stuff, and we'll have you on again soon. Appreciate the time, man.
Oh, thanks for having me. Good chatting, and see you all this weekend.
All right, that's Mason Ginsberg of Bourbon Street Shots, part of the ESPN True Hoop Network, talking Pelicans there. That's a good talk. The Pelicans, like we said, are kind of that team that's kind of similar to the Wolves in terms of just there's so many different like polarizing topics about them and so many different sides to how people feel about where they're at, where they're going, the coaching situation, the stars on the team, and the future, and all that stuff.
There just seems to be a lot of tension.
Yeah.
About, finally getting over that hump. And we were in this position, a few years ago with Kevin Love. We're like, oh, we just got to make it to the playoffs so, he'll want to stay, and then we can, keep building this thing. And it feels kind of similar like that with Boogie, except Boogie seems much happier in New Orleans than Kevin Love did here.
Yeah.
But yeah, it feels very similar, and the Pelicans seem like a very relatable team.
Yeah, for sure. So the Pelicans coming to Minneapolis this weekend to take on the Wolves. Lots of Wolves basketball to go here the rest of the season, and we got the All-Star break coming up in about a month and a half. Be interesting to see how things go in the next couple of weeks. The Wolves are going to have a pretty tough schedule ahead. They got the Cavs coming in. You got the Celtics this
I think
Friday.
We're going to be talking about that Celtics game next week.
Yes, we are. And so lots to go on here, and lots of important games for the Wolves ahead here in the next few weeks. A very tough schedule ahead, but they're still sitting atop the division right now and sitting in that fourth spot in the West. Thanks to Mason Ginsberg for joining us this week. Thanks to you for listening. You can find the Raised by Wolves podcast on iTunes. Just search Raised by Wolves. Give us a friendly rating. You can find us at podcast1.com and, of course, 1500ESPN.com as well. For Derek James, I'm Manny Hill. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your Wolves basketball, and we'll talk to you next week.